You're listening to Crossroads International Church podcast. Welcome. We hope this podcast will bless you from wherever you're listening to it. For more information, go to our website at xrgs.nl. And now, let's get into the podcast.
Friends, we've been busy the last few weeks, and I want to continue with our theme on a Sunday. We've been looking at the things that Jesus taught, the things that Jesus said. Tonight, we're going to focus on the things that Jesus said the last 24 or so hours of his life. We're going to focus on the Last Supper, the Passover meal, some things that Jesus said. There are two things I want to focus on that Jesus said that night, that Thursday night with his disciples. He said several things, but there are two things that I want us to remember, that I want us to consider, because I believe it's in the light of remembering those two things that Jesus said at that Passover meal, that Last Supper. It's as we are reminded of those two things that the cross begins to really make sense. It helps us understand the cross. It helps us understand this Good Friday. When we remind ourselves of those two things that Jesus said to his disciples that Thursday night, we're going to look at that. And we're going to allow those two things to help us understand again the full meaning and truth of the cross for our lives. Then we're quickly going to look at the seven things that Jesus said, those seven statements that Jesus said as we consider his final words on the cross. Then I want to highlight very quickly just two of those. Those statements of Christ on the cross. And then we're going to have communion together. And then I'm going to invite you to respond at the cross. I want to say to you, when we respond, we've got our prayer team and some of our elders are here. Elders, prayer team, I'm going to ask that we maybe set up along the side afterwards. And so I really invite you to let someone pray with you tonight. So that's going to happen down the side there while we respond at the end. So there you've got the roadmap. You know where we're going. The last 24 hours or so of Jesus' life, focusing on that Last Supper, that Passover meal, looking at two things, reminding ourselves of two very important things that he said, and they make sense for us. We understand them. They help us understand when we consider the events of Friday, the cross. But before we get there, let's just very quickly remind ourselves as we set the scene for ourselves. We remember the events of this Holy Week, this last week. You remember, so Jesus was in Bethany with his friend Lazarus. You remember that? Bethany is just outside of Jerusalem, not far at all. And then on Sunday, last Sunday, Johan reminded us what we call Palm Sunday, Jesus then processed in to Jerusalem last Sunday. And back of a donkey, palm branches, you remember all of that. And so from there, Jesus moved to the temple. He overturned the tables of the money changers. We understand that for a while there has been tension between Jesus and the religious leaders. For in their eyes, they saw him challenging their status, their authority, their power, their message. And now when Jesus comes and he overturns the tables in the temple, not only is he doing all those things, but he's also affecting their pockets. For they shared in the proceeds of the money changers. And so this tension was just growing. That's always been there. We have to find a way. This Jesus is causing trouble for us. We've got to get rid of him somehow. Monday, Jesus goes and he teaches again in the courts of the temple. Tuesday, he retraces his steps and he goes back to Bethany. And we have that beautiful scene. You remember Jesus at Simon the leper's house and the lady with the alabaster jar comes and this beautiful foreshadowing of his burial, of his death, of his anointing. She comes and she anoints him with this alabaster jar of perfume. You remember that? Wednesday, he's back in Jerusalem and this continues and he continues to teach. And this tension grows from the side of the religious leaders. Jesus is a thorn in their side. Thursday is the day of preparation for the Passover. People bring their lamb and they take their lamb to the religious leaders, the priest at the temple. The priest slaughter the lamb, give it back to the people. They roast the lamb as part of their preparations for the start of the Passover meal after sunset on the Thursday night. Jesus then goes on Thursday and he sends some of his disciples to go ahead to find a place and to begin making preparations for them to share this Passover meal, this Last Supper as we refer to it, together. And so the Last Supper is Jesus and his disciples on the Thursday evening sharing together the Passover meal. That's what it was for them, the Passover meal, you remember, which commemorates God liberating his people, freeing his people, setting his people free from slavery. That's what they remembered, but we understand that Jesus, through his actions and his words on that night, would forever transform our understanding of that meal. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, I've shared with you before, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they share about 17 to 25 verses they give to this Last Supper. John's Gospel uses 155 verses spread over 5 chapters dedicated to this last meal. So this is now where we pick up the story. Jesus, the Last Supper with his friends. And here's the first thing that he said that I want us to remember and to hold before us in light of the cross. We find it in John's Gospel, chapter 13. Jesus said, "A new commandment I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. And it's by this that everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." And then later in John 15, Jesus says this again. "My command is this." Hours before his crucifixion, this is the conversation that Jesus is having with his friends, with his disciples. This is what he has to say. You and I should take note. John 15, he says, "This is my command to you. Love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friend." Which, of course, is exactly what he was going to do the next day. So Jesus here is saying, "I have shown you, I have said, I have taught in our time together, and I hope that you've heard this, is that you are to love one another, but not just in any way. It's a sacrificial kind of love, to love as I have loved you. I have said it, oh, but the time is coming when I will truly show it, when I will demonstrate my love for you. I want you to see the extent of my love for you," which is what we see on the cross. And then he dares to go and say, "I want you to love one another in the same way." So he says, love sacrificially. Then again, in John 15, 7, he says, "I give you these commandments so that you love each other." Three times in the last 24 hours. At this meal, Jesus says what he's saying, this is how the kingdom works. Some of his final words, this is what it's going to take, people. Here's what it looks like. This is what it's going to take to heal you, to heal the world. This is what I am expecting of you. This is what it means to be my disciple, that you love one another as I have loved you. And so Jesus here is not talking about, and so we hold this, because remember, the cross is coming. Love one another as I have loved you. And Jesus is not talking about a warm, fuzzy feeling love. He's not even really talking about a deep friendship. He's not saying you should all have warm, fuzzy love for one another or form these deep bonds of friendship. No, the love he's talking about is the kind of love that says, I am willing to do what is best for you. To consider a willingness to consider your well-being above my own. A willingness to sacrificially, to selflessly care, seeking your best. How can I lift you up? How can I encourage you? How can I build you up? How can I help you experience life to the utmost and the fullest? This agape word, which we've used so much, says the love that Jesus is talking about, that you love one another as I've loved you, is the selfless, sacrificial for the sake of the other. What can I do? How can I live my life that is best for you? This kind of talk just makes us crazy, actually. It just almost doesn't even sound right. What about me? What about the toll it's going to take on my life if I put you before me? Surely that can't be right. So Jesus talks about, and he says, this is my expectation of you, that you love one another sacrificially, selflessly, as I have loved you. And you'll come to see soon what that means. It is the central ethic of the kingdom of God to selflessly love one another. And so I hear these words and I hold it of Jesus. This is my command to you, that you love one another as I have loved you. So I hold that. If I want to understand the cross, I need to hold this. And I want to say, I want to remind us as a church, do we love one another or do we just barely put up with one another? How good are we, church, at loving one another sacrificially? Caring for one another. It's the kind of church I want to belong to. It's the kind of church I want us to be. It's the kind of church Jesus is asking us to be. To love one another. And so I hold this idea of sacrificially loving in light of the cross. But I hold it in two ways. See, because what Jesus is saying, first of all, he's saying, I love you sacrificially. That's the first thing he wanted his disciples to hear. You need to know, Peter, John, James, Paul. I've included myself there. You need to know and you need to hear this night, hours before my death, that I love you. And you will come to see that the extent of my love, and I will love you sacrificially. I love you, and that's the first thing that I need to know as I look at the cross. I need to hear and understand those words and the heart of Jesus to love one another. And it begins with, I love you. And so I hold it there. In other words, a willingness, the cross demands from us a willingness to receive the love of God. To be loved in a sacrificial way. So many of us think we are not worthy of such love. Are you open to be loved sacrificially by God? But I also need to hear the words of Jesus. And so firstly, I love you. But also, this is what I expect of you. So I hold it that I am loved sacrificially, but I am also asked to go and love others sacrificially. And to understand the cross means to understand both that I am loved eternally and sacrificially, but at the very same time, I cannot walk away from the cross, understanding that I'm called to do the same and extend that love to others. So this idea of loving one another. The second thing that Jesus said, we find in Luke's Gospel, chapter 22. From the Message translation, I read for us, within minutes, they were bickering over who of them would end up the greatest. But Jesus intervened. And he said, kings like to throw their weight around, and people in authority like to give themselves fancy titles. It's not going to be that way with you. Let the senior among you become like the junior. Let the leader act the part of the servant. And so here they are. We find them bickering within minutes, still having this understanding of what Jesus was going to do. A king on a throne. Will I become the minister of transport in your kingdom, Jesus? Or can I have the title of minister of finance? Will I have an office down the hall from you, Jesus? And so they're bickering, who is most important? And Jesus says, let the senior among you become like the junior. Let the leader act the part of the servant. And then again, later on in a different context, but we read in Mark's Gospel, chapter 10, the same idea comes up. Again, they're bickering about who is most important. And one comes to Jesus, Jesus, can I sit on your left? The other said, Jesus, can I sit on your right? And Jesus responds with these words in Mark 10, verse 43, 45. It's not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. And then Jesus now connects it and he extends it. And to give his life as a ransom for many. So we come to the cross remembering the words of Jesus. I expect of you to love one another sacrificially, to love as I have loved you. If you want to be great, you have to be a servant. There is a different way to greatness. And then he connects that sacrificial love, that servant to all, and he says, I have come to give my life as ransom for many. And so these two ideas, these things that he was talking about, now plays itself out in this most dramatic of ways on the cross. He now lives those truths as he demonstrates, as he set the example in the most incredible way of these two truths. You see, in our world today, everybody wants to be great. And our definition of greatness includes ideas such as power, control, influence, wealth, fame, good looks, and it has messed up our world and it has caused a lot of abuse and pain, injustice. But if we listen to what Jesus says about greatness, the way to life is for us to be servants. And it's like he says, there's this transformation that takes place in our lives and in the lives around us, in the world around us. Can you imagine when the world begins to live this way? To love sacrificially and to serve one another. And so he speaks these words. Love one another as I've loved you. You want to be great? Well, go to the back of the queue. Don't seek titles and power and influence, but in fact, serve. Serve sacrificially. And so he's talking like this, and I'm sure the disciples are just, yeah, okay, whatever. Remember, this is Thursday night. This is Thursday night. For even the Son of Man did not come to serve, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Greatness, I am reminded of to illustrate. I'm reminded of Oskar Schindler. In 1993, they made a movie, Schindler's List. Anybody see it? Some of you have, the older generation probably. Younger generation, maybe you did it at school or something, I would imagine. Yeah, I thought so. Oskar Schindler, during World War II, he wanted to be great. And he understood to be great in the way that the world understands it. To have fame and fortune, and that's what he wanted. He wanted greatness, and the way to get it was through fame and fortune. And he loved money and a bunch of other things as well. He had a business in what was then Czechoslovakia. It went bankrupt. And then the war, and he decided to join with the Nazi party and saw a way by spying for them and making his way into their good graces. He saw a way of making money, becoming great. And he thought, well, if I start a business in Poland, I think it was, seeing all the Jews being sent to concentration camps, there's free labor there. And so I can have fame and fortune and be great and make a lot of money by asking the Nazi party if they can give me this free labor. And they agreed. And so he built this factory in Poland. This is a true story, so by the way. Built this factory in Poland, and he used this free prison labor. And he became a very wealthy man. Until he started to realize that these people are dying, and something happened in him, something changed in him, and he began to see the injustice, the pain, and the suffering of these people working in his factory. And he came to the realization, perhaps maybe I can do something to save their lives. And he devised a plan, and he convinced the Nazi leaders that, listen, I need to move my factory. And as I'm moving my factory, I need to move my workers with me. And so he started to compile a list of the people that needed to move to this other factory with him so that he could save them and that they would not have to die. As you could see, these people are being killed. But there was a limit to what he could do. And so he was compiling a list. These are the people that I will save. The clip you're going to see now is Oskar Schindler with his Jewish partner compiling this list to decide who will be saved. Let's put a list together. Have a look at this.
How many? 850, give or take. Give or take what, Stern? Give or take what? Count them. How many? You can finish that page.
What did Gerd say about this? You just told him how many people you needed, and you're not buying them. You're buying them, you're paying him for each of these names.
If you were still working for me, I'd expect you to talk me out of it. Costing me a fortune. Finish the page and leave one space at the bottom.
List is an absolute good. the list is life.
So here we have this unlikely hero who came to understand greatness in a different way, and he gave his fortune, all his money, to rescue about 1,100 Jews. He paid a ransom. Here is some money. He paid a ransom for the lives of these 1,000 Jews, saving them from death. This is but a sad and a faint echo of what Jesus Christ did for you and me. In Mark 10, Jesus said, "For the Son of Man came to give his life as a ransom for many." The Apostle Paul said, you remember, "You and I have been bought with a price." The price was Jesus' life. Romans 3:23, "All have sinned and fall short of God's glory, but all are treated as righteous freely by his grace because of a ransom that was paid by Jesus Christ. Through his faithfulness, God displayed Jesus as the place of sacrifice where mercy is found by means of his blood." And so Jesus begins, as he sits with his friends, eating with them, "Hey, can I just remind you how much I love you? And I want to say to you at the same time, please, this is what I expect of you, that you will love one another as I have loved you." And then he says, "Also, can I just remind you about true greatness and true life? To truly be great in life, you have to be not seek to be on top of the pile or first in the queue, but at the back to serve. That's true greatness." And so now we see here that we hold these two ideas of love and servanthood, and they play themselves out in this most dramatic of ways on the cross, where, as you saw in that video clip, where this man gave his fortune to pay a price so that people can be bought, so that they are his now and they can go on the trucks and not go to the camps and be free. What Jesus is saying to us in Mark 10 is, "I've paid a ransom. I'm paying the price. It's my life. You are mine. You belong to me. I've bought you with a price. It's my life so that you can be free. Why? Because I love you sacrificially. I will give my life. I want to serve you in the most ultimate way that I can by giving my life so that you can understand greatness and life. You and I have been bought with a price." Okay, so continue the story. Jesus gets up after supper. He takes his disciples. They cross the Kidron Valley. They go to the Garden of Gethsemane. His disciples are with him. He said, "You stay here, you pray." He takes some disciples with him. "Come with me." They go on a little bit more. "You stay here, you pray." And Jesus, Luke tells us, goes and he prays and he perspires blood and he prays this prayer. And he said, "Lord, will you take this cup from me?" And then he prays this prayer that you and I should pray every single day of our lives, every moment of our lives. He prays, "Lord, yet not my will, but your will be done in my life." He teaches us again a beautiful prayer. He says, "Will you take this cup from me, but not my will, but your will be done in my life." Pray it now as you sit there. "Not my will, but yours be done in my life, Lord." Anyway, shortly after that, he's betrayed by a friend. He's arrested. The Jewish leaders take him away, and In the dead of night, he's put on trial. He's found guilty for blasphemy, and he's sentenced to death the next morning, Friday morning, this day that we celebrate, that we remember. He's taken to the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate, and again put on trial, and he's mocked and he's tortured and ultimately found guilty of the crime of insurrection. Seen to be plotting against Caesar, against Rome. Mark's gospel tells us that it was about 9 o'clock in the morning that Jesus was crucified. Luke's gospel tells us it was about 3 in the afternoon that he died and took his last breath. And so in between 9 and 3, those 6 hours, Jesus said 7 things. Let's remind ourselves of those things. I'm going to invite you to say them with me. The first, we see this in John 19, Jesus looking down at his mother and his disciples, and his friend, his disciple John, he says these words, will you say them with me? Behold your son, behold your mother. And with that, he entrusted the care of his mother to his friend John. Then in Luke 23, we read those who have crucified him, mocking him. Jesus looks at them and he says these words, will you say them with me? Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they are doing. 2 thieves were crucified on either side of Jesus. One mocked Jesus and the other said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And in Luke 23, we read, Jesus said these words, will you say them with me? Today you will be with me in paradise. Then near the end of his suffering, the one who has promised living water cries out, we read in John 19, will you say these words with me? I am thirsty. Then we find Jesus in pain and agony moments before his death, praying once more from Psalm 22, these incredible words, will you say them with me? My God, why have you forsaken me? And then we read in Luke's gospel that Jesus prayed once more, another psalm, Psalm 31. These words, will you say them with me? Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. Finally, John 19, before he breathes his last breath, he says these words. Say them with me. It is finished. I want to highlight 2 very quickly as we wrap it up and get ready to share communion together. Jesus prays once more this incredible prayer on the cross. He is hanging on the cross, showing us what to love sacrificially means, what it means to be a servant to others. He is hanging on the cross, giving his life. And he looks at those who were mocking him, those who had crucified him, and he prays this incredible prayer. Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. And here's the thing I want us to know, the thing I want us to consider tonight. Jesus hanging on the cross, giving his life as a ransom, praying for those who were mocking him. Father, please forgive them. Here's what I want you to know. Tonight, Jesus is looking down 2,000 years of history into your eyes and mine. And he prays that prayer for me and for you. Father, please forgive Paul. Please forgive Johan. Please forgive him. Please forgive her. Forgive him. That's what we need to hear tonight. Jesus, looking down history into your eyes and mine, today we remember that Jesus offered himself as an atoning sacrifice so that you and I can be forgiven, set free from slavery of sin. Because I need it, and because you need it. The love, the servanthood plays itself out on the cross so that you can be free, so that you can be forgiven. That prayer was prayed for you. for me, because we need it. And here's what I want you to consider. As Jesus is giving himself and is asking the Father to forgive, do you think the Father will turn him down? Imagine it. Jesus giving his life and he's praying, Father, please forgive Paul. He's asking that of the Father. Do you think the Father is going to go, sorry, Jesus. Sorry, son. It's not enough. It's not good enough. It's not enough to forgive Paul his sin. Will the Father turn down Jesus' prayer, his sacrifice? No. Of course not. Remember, Jesus spent his life showing us who the Father is. You remember the prodigal son and the father standing with open arms. And so I want you to consider, as Jesus is on the cross and he's praying, Father, please forgive him. Please forgive her. What will the Father say? Friends, this is why you and I can say with confidence, Psalm 103, as far as the east is from the west, so far the Father will remove my sin from me, because of Jesus' prayer, Father, please forgive them. And so tonight, as we consider the cross, Jesus is asking us to hear his prayer for you and me, and to receive the Father's forgiveness, to believe and receive his mercy and grace, not thinking that his sacrifice is not enough. He's asking us to hear his prayer and to receive his mercy and the Father's grace and forgiveness. To claim that, to say yes to that. But then at the same time, what's happening here is also Jesus says, I love you, go and love one another. I will serve you, I will wash your feet, go and serve one another. I forgive you. I give my life so that you might be forgiven. Receive my forgiveness. Hear my prayer is for you. Understand it's for you and receive it. But at the same time, I'm asking you to consider extending that forgiveness to others. It's the way he works. So as I look at the cross, I see and I hear Jesus praying, Father, please forgive Paul. And will I receive that forgiveness? But I also hear, and I have to ask the question, who do I need to forgive? I receive God's forgiveness for myself, but who do I need to forgive? Do you need to forgive somebody tonight? And then the last one is this. Jesus prays, Psalm 31, into your hands I commit my spirit, it is said. It's believed that it was an ancient Jewish prayer that mothers prayed and taught their children to pray before they go to bed. Into your hands I commit my spirit. But I want you to notice just before that, Jesus prayed Psalm 22. He prayed, my God, why have you forsaken me? Did his father forsake him? Of course his father did not forsake him. But in that moment on the cross, he must have felt alone and scared and abandoned and disappointed. And God, where are you? As he's hanging on the cross alone. Of course, he felt like he was abandoned and alone. And so he feels that, yet in his next breath, he says, but into your hands I commit my spirit. I lament, but I trust you. I feel alone, but I put my trust in you. I'm scared, but I put my trust in you. Into your hands I commit my spirit. Friends, you have all received a seed packet. I want you to have a look at that seed packet. We're going to have communion, but here's what I'm going to ask you and how I'm going to ask you to respond. That seed in line with our theme for the year, is representative of your life. That's your life. Let it be symbolic and representative of that. And I'm going to invite you to come and to plant that seed at the cross this evening. So that seed is representative of your life. And in the light of Jesus' death and burial and resurrection, I invite you to come and to plant and to bury that seed. And it's symbolic of so much. It's symbolic of saying, Lord, I surrender my life to you. I give my life to you. I bury, as it were, my life. And with it, it is symbolic that as I look at the cross and your death and your burial, I say, let this be a burial of my old self, gone with the old life. And I put my trust, I commit my spirit into your hands. I commit my life into your hands and ask that you will take this life, forgive me of my sin, Lord, and transform my life. Do something new and something beautiful. Let something new come out of the seed as I surrender it to you, as I commit it to you. It's also me saying, as I plant this, Lord, as I surrender this to you, as I give this to you, I'm saying, Lord, forgive me my sin. And I give you my past, and I plant my past there, and my present and my future and my mistakes and my shame and my guilt. I give it all to you and I surrender it to you. Will you take it, Lord? Will it die with you? And will it be raised on Sunday to new life? Will it be transformed? Will my life be transformed, my past, my present, my future, into something beautiful, into something new? And so I ask for your forgiveness. The old is gone, let the new come in me. And all my sin and shame. But also, if there is someone that I need to forgive, God, it's symbolic of that as well. And I plant, Lord, that hurt and that pain and that unforgiveness I've been carrying in my life for so long, that abuse, that hurt, I give it to you. I surrender it to the cross. Let it die with you, Jesus. As I release it, as I let it go, I give to you all those who have hurt me, harmed me. I give it to you. And I leave it at the cross. And then we come back on Sunday and we see the transformation. Amen.
Thank you for listening, and we hope that you have a wonderful week. See you next time.